can't say on
technical
air.
Technical analysis.
But here's the thing. You have three banks. Each one of these banks that failed were considered one-offs. Okay, there's no such thing as one-offs. There's no such thing as three-offs. The same sort of stuff, risk-taking, that those three banks took is duplicated throughout the banking system, particularly in the mid-sized banks, the regional banking system. There's not a lot of confidence in the banking system right now, and people are pulling their money out of banks.
Clay, banks are herd animals in a sense. They all move in the same direction. They're all trying to make money for the most part in the same basic ways when it comes to lending and looking at the rates and what they're doing. And that means that if some of these banks are on the brink, others are on the brink, what happens?
It's not going to be pretty. And we started off the week, unfortunately, telling you, and I'm surprised that it isn't a bigger story. The second, third, and fourth biggest United States bank collapses in history have happened in the last 6 weeks. And I don't think, unfortunately, that this story is going away, because what it feels like to me is occurring here is things are rapidly getting worse as it pertains to the fastest interest rate hike we've seen in 40 years. I keep hammering on this show, look out for commercial real estate. That is the next one. A lot of banks have massive amounts of risk on their books with the amount that they have guaranteed for the purchase of many of these big commercial real estate properties. And as these real estate properties are moving off of 2 and 3% interest rates, suddenly the math doesn't work because they have two simultaneous issues going on, Buck. One is a lot of people just aren't going into the office anymore. So many companies don't need anywhere near the amount of real estate that they have right now for their office workers. Two, the inflation rate certainly has skyrocketed, but the interest rate has skyrocketed. That combination of both is going to create a major bloodbath that may threaten many more banks before all is said and done. I don't think this is over. I hate to finish off the week talking about this, but if I were worried, if I were investing in a lot of these regional banks right now, I'd be super nervous about where things are going.
Well, I'm going to head over to Peg Leg Porker and get some barbecue here in Nashville, because that's my favorite spot. So I got that going for me, which is nice. And Clay, we're going to be doing some Nashville things this weekend, and we hope everyone has a really nice time with their family.
It's Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah, Cinco de Mayo. Maybe make yourself a margarita and enjoy. So happy thoughts, everybody. It's all going to be okay. Make sure you join us Monday. We'll explain on Monday why it's all going to be, well, not all of it, but like in general, things are good.
This Yay. Sad we story is Buck's fault. Have great weekends.
Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the front lines of truth.
If you own a small business, you know the value of time. GetRefunds.com does too. That's why they've made it easy, no matter how busy you are, to apply for the Employee Retention Credit, or ERC. Go to GetRefunds.com to get started, and in less than 8 minutes, see if your business qualifies for ERC assistance.
Your business may be eligible for a payroll tax refund of up to $26,000 per employee kept on payroll during COVID-19. GetRefunds.com has already helped clients claim over $3 billion in payroll tax refunds through the ERC, and they may be able to help your business too.
There's no upfront charge either. They don't get paid until your business gets its refund. Many businesses believe they won't qualify based off of incomplete or outdated information.
Don't let this opportunity pass you by, because this payroll tax refund is only available for a limited time. Go to GetRefunds.com. That's GetRefunds.com.
It's Jesse Kelly. Our government keeps bailing out banks. What if the next bank is yours? Uncle Sam can't bail them all out. It's time to take action and bail yourself out. If you've been on the fence about buying gold and silver, now is the time to make the call. Gold and silver can be a protection for your portfolio, but can also be used as currency, and I'm afraid we might need both soon. Why not have a little gold and silver on hand just in case and shield your portfolio? Now's the time to call the Oxford Gold Gold Group and just hear what they have to say. The phone call is free. Securing your IRA or 401k with real gold and silver is a portfolio protection plan, and Oxford Gold has made it as easy as 1, 2, 3. One app, one call, and you pick the precious metals. That's it. You now own real precious metals just like I do. Call Oxford Gold today and ask about additional free bonus opportunities you may be eligible for. Call 833-995-GOLD. That's 833-995-GOLD.
When the whole world seems to be in a state of confusion, Andy Vieira and Mark Thomas help you sort it out. Join the club. Weekday morning, 6 to 9 on AM 670 KMZQ. Talk radio done right.
670 KMZQ presents After Close, the radio show, powered by GFL Capital Mortgage. Join your hosts, Kevin Sherba and Danny Velazquez, to start your morning off right, educating and guiding you through the mortgage process from application through closing. Learn about how to navigate through the ever-changing mortgage market. Keep up to date with current products, guidelines, and how to avoid common pitfalls. Listen every Saturday morning from 7 to 8 here on 670 KMZQ.
Licensed by Division of Mortgage Lending, Nevada License Number MB426. NMLS number 64367.
Come see why thousands have made the switch to Findlay Chevrolet. 215 at South Rainbow. Find new roads.
FINDLAY. Findlay Chevy is a place to
live from the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa Studios.
From the world-famous Las Vegas Strip.
AM 670 KMCQ, Las Vegas.
Locally owned and operated by Kemp Broadcasting and Digital Outdoor.
Breaking news this hour from townhall.com. I'm John Scott. Protesters in New York are calling for an arrest in the death of Jordan Neely, who died after being put in a chokehold by a fellow subway passenger.
A New York medical examiner's office ruled that Jordan Neely's death was a homicide from compression of the neck. Groups of protesters in New York are demanding charges. Witnesses say Neely was acting erratically on an F train in the New York subway Monday afternoon, threatening passengers and throwing garbage in his jacket when he was tackled by bystanders. Police questioned and then released a 24-year-old white Marine shown on video holding Neely in a headlock for at least 3 minutes. Prosecutors promised a rigorous investigation, and police are seeking additional witnesses, photos, and video that might help illuminate what transpired. New York Mayor Eric Adams said Thursday there were many layers to the incident, saying he respects the process. I'm Jennifer King.
Also at townhall.com, under a proposed rule change, foreign citizens and companies would need U.S. government approval to buy property within 100 miles of 8 military bases.
The proposal follows a Chinese firm's attempt to build a plant near the Grand Forks Air Base in North Dakota, which raised national security concerns. The new rule would affect Grand Forks and 7 other bases, including 3 that are tied to the B-21 Raider, the nation's future stealth bomber. The Treasury Department's Office of Investment Security is set to propose the rule today. It would give expanded powers to the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. Tayshia Stevens reporting.
The Republican-controlled North Carolina legislature has approved a ban on nearly all abortions after 12 weeks of pregnancy. And that's in response to last year's overturning of Roe v. Wade at the U.S. Supreme Court. The measure passed by the Senate on Thursday lowers the time restriction from the current 20 weeks. On Wall Street, stocks sharply higher, the Dow up 585 points, the NASDAQ adding 283. More at townhall.com.
People ask me sometimes, Lance, I'm worried about my finances and I feel bad because I shouldn't be worried, right? I realize that inflation is going to be eating up money. I've got to do something to get around this crazy stock market and Biden's spending spree. Gold has, since the beginning of time, been the resource that God's people have relied on. The silver is mine and the gold is mine, is what the prophet Haggai said during a time of great shaking. To protect your retirement, I recommend that you diversify your 401k or IRA right out of paper assets and into physical gold. And the best way to do that is with Gold IRA from the Birch Gold Group. I want you to text the words FAITH, F-A-I-T-H, to 989898 and get a free info kit on Gold IRAs. There's no strings attached to this, so just text FAITH, F-A-I-T-H, to 989898 and see what I've discovered here about gold and its ability to stabilize your investment and create a storage of wealth for you in unstable
Hey friends, it's Patrick Casal, the Multicare Group. With the difficulty in finding quality employees to ensure your business thrives, I have a solution for you. Offer Employee Benefits. Benefits are 100% tax deductible to the employer, income tax free to the employees and dependents, can be used nationally, and are far more robust than any other individual plan being offered. The Multicare Group can help you obtain affordable quality health benefits. We have access to association health plans that offer multiple options, attractive rates for you and your employees, with national access and the finest hospitals and physicians in United States. Call the Multicare Group today for your no obligation quote, 702-396-9449. We have access to all the carriers that offer health insurance, dental coverage, vision care, group life and disability insurance. Allow our relationships to guarantee you the most competitive rates. The Multicare Group can provide you with all these services, plus we can offer payroll services at the most competitive rates, along with the best workers' compensation programs available in the country. Call Patrick Casal of the Multicare Group today, 702-396-9449.
It's 12:04. This is your KMCQ News Flash. I'm Jim Dallas. With Mount Charleston's near-record snowpack beginning to melt away, water experts are not expecting any major flooding. National Weather Service officials say cooler temperatures and higher elevations in the Spring Mountains have kept the snowmelt at a normal rate, preventing the rush of water coming down from the hills. Water officials say the slower snowmelt also means a boost to southern Nevada's water supply. Las Vegas gets about 90% of its water from Lake Mead. The other 10% comes from the valley's underground aquifer, which gets recharged each year from the snow melt-off. When it comes to car insurance, Nevada ranks as one of the most expensive in the country. The average cost for full coverage in the Silver State is $2,779 a year. That's about $765 higher than the national average, 43rd out of the 50 states. Las Vegas drivers pay an average of about $2,800 per year. Local insurance officials say Las Vegas drivers pay more for insurance due to the 24/7 economy, the influx of visitors, and our dense population. Well, the Golden Knights will have a new local TV partner next season. We'll have more on that story next hour.
KMCQ on-time traffic is powered by Meineke Car Care Centers. Stop in now for a premium synthetic blend oil change for only $24.95. Meineke, doing car care right.
Well, watch for accidents right now. Martin Luther King at Wyatt. That's in the early stages. Tree line at Sahara. And another hit and run, this time E Street at Washington. And do expect a little bit of congestion there on the Beltway, 215 eastbound at Gibson.
Gather around. Mr. President, it's time to get to work. Surely we both agree that the national debt is too high.
Listen up.
Surely we both agree that inflation hurts American families. Surely we can trim waste and streamline programs to make them both stronger and more efficient. Congressional Republicans are ready to act to save our country and to make America stronger.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Wall.
Fun lovers and truth seekers, you have come to the right place. It is live and local for a Friday, May 5th. It's Cinco de Mayo. It is time to celebrate. And we, of course, celebrate whether it's a Cinco de Mayo sort of day or just any other Friday. We always celebrate what we call the best day of the week. Buckle up, folks. Here we go.
Oh, man. What day is it?
It's Friday.
Friday.
Wall to wall.
It's Friday.
Friday.
Wall to wall.
It's Friday.
Friday.
Oh, yeah.
What day is it?
It's Friday.
It is the day that we let our hair down. We have a little fun. especially on Cinco de Mayo. Oh, this is going to be a good one. I can just tell. Joining us now, really happy to have him on, Andy Matthews, longtime friend and current Nevada State Controller. He joins us from Carson City. Andy, first of all, your impressions of the job, is it what you thought it was?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you, Kevin, for having me on. Great to kick off this Friday afternoon with you. I would join you in letting my hair down, but I don't have any left, so that's not really an option for me. But absolutely loving the job. It's an absolute honor to serve as Nevada State Controller. We have got an amazing team, an amazing staff of intelligent, dedicated, hardworking individuals. And yeah, you know, like with anything, a lot of it has been what I have expected. There's been a few things that are a little bit different because you can never, you know, fully prepare for everything that can come up in a job. But, you know, we're working hard to do the day-to-day things that our office needs to do, and could not be happier.
People have an idea of what, say, the state treasurer does, watch all the money and make sure the money's there. What does the state controller do?
Sure, and it is admittedly one of the lower profile statewide offices that we have here in the state, but basically the state controller serves as the chief fiscal officer for the state. We administer the state's accounting system, process transactions on the state's behalf. We run point on, you know, debt collection for the state and vendor registration, a few other things. And as I've said on your program before, you know, one of the things that I'm going to be bringing to this office, I think, is really badly needed is just greater transparency and accountability with how and where Nevadans hardworking tax dollars are being spent. And look forward to coming back and talking with you sometime in the very near future to give, I hope, some really good updates on that front.
I want to ask you, because you joined a coalition of 34 state financial officers in signing a letter to the Biden administration, essentially criticizing a new federal housing finance agency policy that actually will make it more expensive for folks with good credit to buy homes. First of all, where did this come from? What is this organization, the Federal Housing Finance Agency?
Yeah, so this is, you know, obviously a federal agency and that you know, deals with mortgage policy and fees. And what we're talking about here is, and people will know, you know, Fannie and Freddie, right? These are the government-backed mortgages that we're talking about here. And right now, I mean, that's you know, well over half of all mortgages here in this country fall into this category. And it won't get too into the weeds on all of the policies that, you know, the agency is involved with. But the bottom line on this is that, you know, this agency is going to be assessing higher fees, as you said, on those who have done the right thing, you know, those who have been financially responsible, those who have put themselves in a position where they've got better credit scores, and those who are able to put more money toward a down payment on buying a home. These are the people under this new policy for these government-backed mortgages that we're talking about who are actually now going to be penalized by having to pay higher fees in order to subsidize those with lower credit scores, those who are higher risk borrowers. And, you know, one of the lessons that we are all taught at a fairly young age is the importance of financial responsibility. You know, work hard, earn a good paycheck, don't spend money frivolously, save your money. And you do that, and you're going to put yourself in a position of personal financial strength so that when the time comes to, you know, live out what is a big part of the American dream, you know, purchasing a home, you're going to be in a position to do that, and to do that from a position of financial security, and to be able to get, you know, a really good opportunity for yourself. This takes that incentive structure and turns it completely upside down, where we're actually going to be penalizing those who have played by the rules, those who have done the right thing, and actually charge these higher fees for those who, again, through their own hard work and sacrifice, have been able to attain higher credit scores or to subsidize those who have not. And unfortunately, you know, this is the kind of philosophy we've seen throughout all of the policies from the Biden administration. And this is just another really egregious example of them basically taking the concepts of fairness and standing them on their head.
Hey, have you reached out to the federal government, to the agency, or to somebody else in the Biden administration to get an explanation as to why we want to penalize people
who do the right thing and that keep their house in order?
Well, we did send the letter that you referenced, and we sent this not only to President Biden, but also to Director Thompson at the Federal Housing Finance Agency, basically sharing our concerns with us. And I do want to take a moment to acknowledge the leadership of Stacey Garrity, who is the state treasurer in Pennsylvania, for leading on this effort. And as you mentioned, you know, she's put together and led a coalition of 34 state financial officers around the country in speaking out and voicing our concerns over this. But, you know, the Biden administration has, and Director Thompson and others, you know, they have tried to explain publicly their reasoning behind this. And frankly, I think that the more they try to explain it, the worse it looks. They're basically trying to say, well, it's unfair that some people aren't in a position to be able to get home loans, and we need to close that gap and try to help those who, you know, otherwise would not be able to, you know, get a loan. But, you know, we've seen this before, Kevin. Everybody remembers 2008. We know what happens when, you know, you basically try to incentivize those who are much riskier when it comes to a home loan to get a loan when they can't afford it. And we know that Nevada especially was hard hit during the mortgage crisis, the meltdown that happened in 2008. And so my concern is that we're going down a very, very dangerous path again. And look, let's be clear about this. We all want more Americans to be able to afford to buy a home. Like I said, that's a big part of the American dream. But this is not the way to do it, to take the incentive structure and basically turn it on its head in a very reckless and dangerous way. If we want people to be able to afford homes, there are other ways we can do it. You know, we can take steps to reduce inflation, which, again, is the opposite of what the Biden administration has done. We can bring down energy costs. We can implement policies that will lead to lower interest rates. All of these things, are, you know, these are the options we ought to pursue if we really want to address this issue. But, you know, penalizing those who, again, have done the right thing, who have sacrificed, put themselves in a position of financial strength, taking away those incentives, absolute wrong approach. And I'm really honored to stand with my colleagues around the country in speaking out against this.
Again, Nevada State Controller Andy Matthews joining us. Other than sending a letter, shining a light on this this horrible, horrible policy, what is there that you and the other 33 state financial officers can do to force the government to back down?
Well, certainly we can all continue to, you know, we're all state officials, and we can all continue to push for responsible, you know, fiscal policies in our own states. But I think sharing the word, you know, this is of course, a federal policy, but spreading the word about what's going on, about the risks that are involved in this, making sure that citizens in every state across the country understand what's going on here so that they can speak up, they can reach out to their federal officials, they can start to further raise awareness of the risks and the problems of this and the fundamental unfairness and injustice that this represents. You know, elected officials, ultimately, they do respond to pressure. Unfortunately, this is being done by an agency whose leadership is not elected. But, you know, I think that, you know, ultimately, citizens, voters, they have an opportunity to hold those who are in power accountable. And I think arming them with the information about that they need to have about what's going on here so that they can make their concerns known and continue to put that pressure on those who are making these decisions, I think is going to be extremely critical. And then continuing to monitor this. I mean, you know, we're in a very, very difficult economic and financial climate for a lot of people right now because of higher energy costs, because of inflation. And, you know, people need to know how these policies may affect them and their day-to-day lives in terms of managing their own personal finances. And so, you know, making sure that there's public awareness of this, I think, is going to be a critical step. Of course, we would urge the administration to reverse course on this. I don't hold out a lot of hope that they're going to do this just because of the track record. But, you know, that's why we have elections in this country, right? And we're going to continue to speak out against this policy and push for sanity in terms of public policy.
Well, nobody that I know of voted for the Federal Housing Finance Agency. I'm just curious, have you reached out to Catherine Cortez Masto or Jackie Rosen? Those are the federal officials that actually vote on stuff in Congress. Have you reached out to them and had a chance to visit with them about this?
I've not personally on this, but it's a great idea. Look, I would urge all of your listeners who may be affected by this, or even those who may not be affected by this, simply those who have some concerns about this and you know, believe that this is a fundamentally unfair policy, contact your elected officials in Washington. You know, contact your senators, contact your members of Congress. You know, make sure that they hear from you and know that, you know, this is not something that should be allowed to stand. Like I said, elected officials respond to pressure, and I think the more people make it clear that they oppose this, that they recognize it's unjust, they recognize that it provides all of the wrong incentives in terms of, you know, people being responsible with their finances. This is not something people should take lying down, and I encourage people all across our state to speak up.
Is this something that might not be constitutional? Is there something here that where maybe you could end up filing a lawsuit, a class action lawsuit?
Well, my belief, just at a fundamental level, is that far, far too much power is currently invested in the executive branch, right? There is just so much that is done, and I haven't analyzed myself the constitutional question that you raise, but you know, I think so much policy nowadays is simply set unilaterally through the executive branch and is done in a way that bypasses our elected representatives in Congress. And you know, that certainly is not something that's unique to this decision or this particular policy. We've seen that going on for years, that more and more power has been usurped by sort of the regulatory state and various agencies within the executive branch at the expense of Congress. And I think this is just another example. So to me, it absolutely goes to our system of checks and balances, our you know, the principle of accountability. We don't vote for these people, the people at the Federal Housing Finance Agency. We elect representatives to make decisions that are going to affect our country. And I think this is sort of symptomatic of a deeper problem where the executive branch of our federal government, you know, the federal government generally has far too much power. But within the federal government, the executive branch is just wielding too much unilateral authority at the expense of those that we actually vote for and send to D.C. So, you know, we're going to look at every angle possible to push back against this. And as this continues to unfold and develop, we'd love the opportunity to come back and discuss it further.
I would love to have you back on to talk about it. I want to ask you, we're closing out yet another week of the 82nd Nevada legislature. A lot of people that cover the legislature say not much is getting done. Are we to the point where we're going to start seeing bills become law?
Well, you know, I served in the legislature in the state assembly, as you know, for one term 2 years ago in 2021. And the nature of this, you know, how a legislative session usually unfolds is, you know, we're there for 120 days. And for the first, you know, two-thirds, three-quarters of them, you know, there's not it seems like often there isn't a whole lot that gets done. And then there's a lot that happens down the home stretch in those final few weeks. I think it's June 6th. Which is the final day of the session this year, which means it's just over a month left to go. And, yeah, this is where the action is going to be. This is where you're going to see a lot of the horse trading and the deal-making and all of that. And you know, we've got a Republican governor. We've got a legislature that's dominated by Democrats. Fortunately, the Democrats do not have veto-proof majorities in both houses. They've got it just in one house, which means that, you know, Republicans are absolutely going to be at the table as the negotiating gets set to kick off here for the home stretch. So I will certainly be watching it very closely. I know you will be as well. But yes, you know, for those who have been kind of observing this and wondering, you know, why hasn't there been a whole lot happening or getting done, and why not a lot of bills being passed out and signed? You know, that's kind of the nature of these things, and starting now and going forward is when the real action is going to begin.
Andy, it's going to be great following what happens over the course of next 6 weeks, and in particular, the role that the governor will take. Are you confident that when he needs to use that veto pen, he will use it?
I hope he will. I certainly believe that in cases where it's wise and responsible to do so in terms of stopping some of the more extreme bills that we're going to see passed out of the Democratic legislature, that the governor is going to be ready to use that veto pen. He may need more than one pen because, you know, what I'm anticipating, he may run out of ink pretty quickly on the first one. But I certainly hope he will on of course, the most egregious stuff that comes out, and I'll be encouraging him to do that. And but ultimately, look, that'll be his decision. And to my point earlier, if there are bills out there that your listeners are concerned about that you've been following, I know you've got a really active and engaged